Blog Talk Radio. Should I say good Black Friday morning, everyone? Thank you for hanging out with me on this Black Friday. Maybe you have decided to not brave the crowds, maybe wait until a little bit later or over the weekend or something like that. But thanks for listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio today. I am Becky Noble. Again, thank you, everyone, for hanging out with me on this Black Friday. Don't know if anybody is fresh in from the battlefield of shopping. The chat room, of course, is open as always, and you can call in here. The number is 347-857-2620, 347-857-2620. And wow, you know, if anybody's got any tales from the Walmart or the Macy's or wherever it is you happen to have gone, any tales from the battlefield, you know, please feel free to call in or write them down in the chat room. And, wow, let us know what's going on out there for those of us who are not brave enough to get out in the crowd. But hope everyone had a fantastic Thanksgiving Day holiday. Everybody is still full and stuffed from their big turkey dinner yesterday. Hope everything was great. I'm sure it was. Hope everyone had time to spend the day with friends and family and loved ones, and being thankful for what we have, and being thankful for living in the greatest nation on earth. And you know, we can't give enough thanks for that. And you know, we also, of course, before I go any further, even though it is the day after Thanksgiving, we want to thank the men and women who did not get to spend yesterday with their loved ones, the men and women who are serving overseas in various capacities, be it the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard, what have you, those brave men and women who put their lives on the line every day and sacrifice their day with their loved ones to defend our freedoms and our liberties. And I'm sure I speak for a lot of people when I say to those men and women, thank you. Thank you very much for your service to this nation. And thank you for not only to you, but to your families for making that sacrifice. And also, I think I'm going to get off of this here in a minute, but I think people maybe who are often overlooked too when we are thanking people who give up their holidays to work, and that is our police officers and our firefighters and our paramedics. Those people give up their holidays too to be on call in case, God forbid, something awful should happen. And so we thank you too. We thank you for your sacrifice and for giving up your holiday to make sure that we're safe and that we are taken care of. But anyway, we, of course, as always, have a lot to get to today. There is no shortage, even though it's a holiday week, no shortage of stuff going on. And so, like I said, we've got a lot to get to. And I think the first thing probably is everybody was talking about earlier this week, the Russian jet that was shot down near the Turkey-Syria border. And I have a report here from Reuters. This is dated Tuesday of this past week, and that is when this happened. There was a Russian warplane that was shot down by Turkish fighter jets. This was near the Syrian border. Turkey claims that they gave multiple warnings to this jet that they were violating airspace, and they claim roughly about 9 or 10 warnings were given to this Russian jet that they were violating airspace. But The Moscow says it could not prove that the jet had not left Syrian airspace. Of course, the Russians have been flying over Syrian. We've been sharing Syrian airspace with the Russians now for a few weeks, and was the first time that a NATO member's armed forces have downed a Russian or Soviet military aircraft since the 1950s. So we're going back to Cold War type events. And Russian and Turkish assets fell on fears of an escalation between the former Cold War enemies. Of course, Russian President Vladimir Putin accused Turkey of being accomplices of terrorism and warning of, quote, very, very serious consequences for the downing of the Russian jet. And he also went on to say, quote, we understand that everyone has their own interests, but we won't allow such crimes to take place. Putin said this. He was attending talks with Jordanian King Abdullah in Sochi, Russia. He also said, quote, we received a stab in the back from accomplices of terrorism. And there's another quote here. This goes on to say, Russia's defense ministry denied the plane had ever crossed the border and said it may have been hit by ground fire. Turkey's action is the first time in decades that a member of NATO has downed a Russian military aircraft. Turkish Prime Minister, forgive me because I'm really going to botch this name, Ahmet Davutoglu, said Tuesday that Turkey had a duty to act against anyone violating its borders. Quote, everyone must know that it is our international right and national duty to take any measure against whoever violates our air or land borders. Davutoglu, oh man, said in Ankara, Turkey on Tuesday. U.S. forces, of course, were not involved in this event, and they chose not to comment any further. But let's see, this goes on to say that Russia's defense ministry said one of its Su-24 fighter jets had been downed in Syria and that according to preliminary information, the pilots were able to eject. It said that the aircraft had been over Syria for the duration of the flight. I believe that one of those pilots has since died, and one has been, the other pilot was recovered, and he, as far as I know, as far as I can looked at everything and seen everything, that he is still alive. The Turkish military said the aircraft had been warned 10 times in the space of 5 minutes about violating Turkish airspace. And officials said that a second plane had also approached the border and been warned. This is from Turkish officials reporting to Reuters. Quote, the data we have is very clear. There were two planes approaching our border. We warned them as they were getting too close. We warned them to avoid entering Turkish airspace before they did, and we warned them many times. Our findings show clearly that Turkish airspace was violated multiple times, and they violated it knowingly. A second official said the incident was not an action against any specific country, but a move to defend Turkey's sovereign territory within its rules of engagement. The downing of the jet appears to, it says, scupper? I've never heard this word. Tell me, anybody, if you have, hopes of a rapprochement between Russia and the West in the wake of the Islamic State attacks in Paris, which led to calls for a united front against the radical jihadist group in Syria. So, you know, I think that we can, gather from this event that if we know anything about Vladimir Putin is not going to take this lying down. He's really not going to care what or why it happened. He's just going to care that it happened. And when he says that there's going to be some consequences, I'm guessing you can probably bet your bottom dollar there's going to be some consequences from Vladimir Putin. He is not like Barack Obama, who draws lines in the sand and then promptly ignores them. You know, I think that it some people may argue that it kind of remains unclear just exactly what Russian interests are in this region. We know that they have been a big supporter of the Assad regime for many years. And, you know, a lot of the times it's not really clear whose side they're on. We don't know. There's some speculation maybe as to whether or not there is going to be some desire for the United States to get involved in this. I think this is something that's probably between Turkey and Russia to hash out, and we will see what happens there. But I don't think, being the pacifist that Barack Obama is, and let's face it, he's a pacifist, he is not going to put boots on the ground for damn near anything. I think there would have to be... There would have to be a full-scale invasion of the United States in order for that to happen. And even then, I'm not, I myself and probably a lot of other people are not convinced that that would happen. But so we have this going on right now. We're dealing with this also in light of the Paris attacks that took place 2 weeks ago in the attacks that took place 2 weeks ago in Paris. And, there is French President Francois Hollande was in Washington this week. This week, or maybe it was late last week. And he is also asking, oddly enough, for a coalition between the United States and Russia in order to defeat ISIS. And Francois Hollande is a guy whose country was just attacked. And so he wants to get these guys. What did that one reporter ask President Obama? Why can't we just take these bastards out? Well, Francois Hollande wants to take these bastards out. Believe it or not, the French. I guess we can't make any jokes anymore about the French surrendering all the time, because right now they've got a lot more, because, you know, this is a family show. He's got a lot more chutzpah than our president does. And it's going to be interesting to see whether or not he gets a lot of cooperation from it's going to be interesting to see if he gets a lot of cooperation from Barack Obama or Vladimir Putin, for that matter. The Russians have their own interests in that region, like I just said, and they're going to put those first. And so, again, like I said, it's going to be interesting to see just how much cooperation from the United States that France gets. President Obama made a big speech with President Hollande in the country this week, or forgive me, it might have been late last week, earlier this week, and went on about, you know, how the French are you know, longtime allies and have been friends for quite a long time and always have our backs and things of that nature, and we try to do the same, but we know with Barack Obama that there's going to be, when he tells Francois Hollande that we have his back, there's going to be limitations to that. And that includes military limitations. He's not going to consider any military options, I don't think, you know, even if Francois Hollande is begging him to do so. And one of the things that he talked about in his, that he believes is going to be a, well, it's going to be a real eye opener for those ISIS guys. And when this was said in the middle of his speech, when the French president was here, it was pretty eye opening to a lot of people. And I don't want to give away the what's the word I'm looking for? Not the punchline, but the oomph line, the line that gets you in your gut. So let's listen as President Obama gives a speech while the French President Francois Hollande was here in the United States this week. Let's take a listen.
I want to salute the people of Paris for showing the world how to stay strong in the face of terrorism. Even as they grieve, Parisians have begun returning to their cafes, riding the metro, and going to stadiums to cheer for their teams. And crowds gathered in the Place de la République, including a mother who brought her children. She said, to let them see that we should not be afraid. As one Parisian said, Paris will always be Paris. And next week, I will be joining President Hollande and world leaders in Paris for the Global Climate Conference. What a powerful rebuke to the terrorists it will be when the world stands as one and shows that we will not be deterred from building a better future for our children. So, President Hollande, my fellow Americans, let's remember we faced greater threats to our way of life before.
So, as usual, global warming, climate change, and, you know, it's interesting because liberals don't really like to use the term climate change, or they use the word the term global warming so much anymore, because there is so much, you know, they went on and on about how the, you know, the science has been decided, it's you know, case closed, this is what it is, and we don't want to hear any more about it, and if you deny it, you're a racist or whatever it is they call you when you question their science. But so President Obama believes that going to the climate change summit is going to be a huge rebuke to ISIS. Now, think about that statement for just a minute. These are people who are terrorists, who, without any second thought, it's second nature to them, will children, will rape women, will kill Christians, will just annihilate and get rid of anybody who does not agree with their ideology. A climate change summit, a climate change conference is really going to stick it to these guys. This is what our president thinks. This is how he thinks that this issue, that terrorism, is going to be gotten under control and maybe perhaps solved. And when I heard this statement, and I know probably a lot of other people were right there with me when it just it made your jaw drop, because I know myself when I heard it and I saw I guess I saw it on TV, you know, I was just, my reaction was, what? A climate change summit is really gonna give these guys what for, and really gonna tell them that we're coming to get them? A climate change summit? This is where we are, people. This is where this president is right now in regards to terrorism and in regards to the defense of our nation against terrorism. He truly believes, because he is such an ideologue, he is so wedded, if not, I would even use the term obsessed. I don't know if anybody else would, but I would, so obsessed with the ideology that he has been brought up with since probably from the time that he was a teenager. He is so obsessed with this ideology that he truly believes that this is what's going to change things, and that he truly believes what this is going to, how this is going to solve terrorism, is a climate change conference. Well, you know, I mean, you've also got to Bernie Sanders recently, Democrat candidate for president, who insists that climate change is the reason for terrorists. You know, you've got White House spokespeople like Blondie herself, Marie Harf, who will tell you that really all these terrorists need is for us to provide jobs for them. And pretty soon, I'm sure that someone else is going to come along and say that they all just need a hug. I mean, it seems like that it's the logical flow, you know, of what comes next. When you talk about that climate change is going to be such a huge rebuke to ISIS, I mean, it's jaw dropping, it's mind boggling, and for those of us who know what needs to be done in this situation and really just want our military to be freed up in order to do it, it's not only all of those things that I just said, but it's also extremely dangerous and it's extremely naive. And you know, you almost got to wonder what was going through the mind of President François Hollande of France when President Obama made this statement, and he's standing next to a guy whose country was just attacked by terrorists, and they lost 130 people in the span of an hour, in 2 weeks ago on a Friday evening, when Parisians were just out enjoying their night out. They were enjoying a concert. They were enjoying a dinner out at a cafe, minding their own business. He's standing next to a guy whose country just experienced this, and his response to that is he will be attending the climate change summit next week, and it's going to be a huge rebuke to ISIS. That is where we're at right now, people. That's that's what's going on. But, you know, we are going to hear more in the coming days and weeks about what Russia's response is going to be. I got a little off topic here. I'm sorry. But, you know, it's really all connected. And so we are going to hear in the next few days and weeks about what exactly Russia's response is going to be to what they believe is an attack by Turkey, by the downing of their warplane on the Turkey-Syrian border earlier this week. And like I said earlier, I don't think that you probably can count on the fact that Vladimir Putin is not going to say, I'm drawing a line in the sand, and then promptly ignore it, because he's not afraid to defend his nation. Vladimir Putin may be a lot of things, but he's not afraid to defend his nation. And I think that probably we have also seen that when he says he's going to do something, he's going to do it. And if it is because in defense of that nation, then all the more. But I'm going to take a very quick break here. We've got tons more to get to. We're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in Chicago. And last week I had a story about just exactly who Donald Trump supporters were. But now I've got, from the Washington Post, I've got Plan B. And Plan B for a lot of the top GOP donors is waiting for Trump to fail. And, well, do they really have a Plan B? Well, we'll talk about that, and we will talk about a whole bunch of other stuff. You are listening to The Conservative Cauldron, Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm Becky Noble, TGIF, TGIBF. Thank God it's Black Friday. Stick around. I'll be right back.
One thing you should know.
We're back. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble. Thank you, everyone, for taking time out of your post-Thanksgiving celebrations, your Black Friday shopping endeavors. Hope it is not too crazy where you are. And, wow, again, like I said, you know, please, you know, check out the chat room or give us a call or, you know, and if you have any really wild and crazy Black Friday stories, because, man, we hear them every year that people just, wow, they're up at 2 in the morning and they're in Walmart by 3 or 4 going crazy. And, wow, let's hear them if you got them. But I'm just not brave enough. Not man enough to brave it. And glad there's people that are. You know, I know there's a lot of people that say that it's their favorite day of the year and they love it. And, you know, hey, whatever, wear what you dig, man, whatever floats your boat. But we are talking about a lot of stuff today here. Of course, we talked about the Russian jet that was shot down earlier this week by Turkey. And I'm sure that there are going to be consequences from Vladimir Putin and Russia because well, he's not Barack Obama. But moving along here, we've got lots of other things to talk about. Of course, there is all of the events going on in Chicago this week surrounding a dash cam police video that was released earlier this week. And this incident actually took place about 13 months ago. So that would make it, October of 2014. And again, we have a Black teenager shot by a white police officer. And, you know, a lot of people have problems with all the videotapes that come out with stuff like this. And I'm no exception, because the problem is that you never know what took place 5 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever, you know, how much ever time before the video started rolling. I have a problem with that, because it takes whatever's on the video a lot of times takes it completely out of context. But in this case, having seen parts of this video and a kid that was shot 16 times, even while he was down on the ground, that's excessive. And he was running away from the police officer as the police officer shot him. So that means that the police officer shot him in the back. You know, I'm not a police officer and I've not had the training. So if there is a justification for shooting someone in the back as to running away from you, you know, please tell me, because maybe it's something I just don't know. But 16 shots is pretty excessive. And the dash cam video clearly shows this kid already on the ground, probably near death at that point anyway, and this cop is still unloading his gun into this kid. And so people are angry. They're understandably angry, but you know, as usual, it goes beyond the actual event and the demands and the complaints and the things that people talk about go way beyond the actual event. But one of the things that a lot of people, a lot of the protesters and a lot of the marchers aren't talking about this week in Chicago is, why did this dash cam video come out now? And also to back up slightly, that this police officer was indicted earlier this week, prior, like a day or so prior to this dash cam video being released. There are some people, I've heard some people ask these questions, but I don't think it's enough. There are not enough people asking why the delay in indicting this cop if they had the evidence to do it, and why so long in the dash cam video to come out. 14 months. You know, I mean, you can argue 6 or 8 months maybe, you know, to do a full investigation. You know, so I think you can argue a bit of a delay, but not 14 months worth. And, well, there is a lot of speculation going on in the Windy City this week. And that's kind of one of the things I think that that you need to keep in mind, is that we are talking about Chicago. And, well, we know that, well, let's just say that things are done a little differently in Chicago than other places in the nation, and they have been for quite some time. And I have a report here from Newsmax, from Wednesday of this week, and it says that Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel, as Sean Hannity likes to call him, Rambo Deadfish Emanuel, released the dash cam video of a white police officer fatally shooting an African-American teenager after 13 months, only to protect his reelection chances earlier this year. And this is a claim made by former Illinois State Representative Michael Patrick Flanagan. And according to Flanagan, he says, quote, it was about getting him reelected, and this couldn't be talked about then in any useful force or way. Michael Flanagan is a Republican who served from 1995 to 1997 in the Illinois House of Representatives. He was on Newsmax TV earlier this week on Wednesday and told the Hardline host, Rick Blackwell, quote, what's also interesting is that the policeman is indicted the day before the video was supposed to be released. So, again, we have this indictment coming the day before this dash cam video was released. He goes on to say, quote, controlling the organs of prosecution and enforcement by Democrats, particularly Chicago Democrats, is a hallmark of their ability to hold on to power, said Flanagan. Emanuel won re-election in April in Chicago's first mayoral runoff after Cook County Commissioner Jesus Garcia forced the incumbent to campaign fiercely across the Windy City because he failed to win a majority of the vote in the February primary. Flanagan said, quote, if you remember that election, it was very close. The vote was 56-44%. I absolutely believe that Rahm Emanuel didn't want anything to make his chances even worse. Emanuel knew it would be close, he added. This would have made it hard. So basically what we have here, as Michael Flanagan is describing it, we have business as usual going on here in Chicago. And for all of the calls from people who are demanding that the police chief be fired, who are demanding the removal of the state's attorney, and her name escapes me, forgive me, they're calling for the removal of all of these people, but nobody has anything to say about Mayor Rahm Emanuel stepping down. And that's interesting. And you know that probably a lot of these people who are in the streets marching and protesting, you know that they voted for Rahm Emanuel, and they voted for him twice. And for this information now, something like this, there's probably not going to be really a concrete way to prove that this is actually what went on, especially in Chicago, because, again, we are talking about Chicago. But also I believe, too, if I remember correctly, that this runoff campaign in Chicago between Rahm Emanuel and Jesus Garcia was a pretty particularly nasty one. And even by Chicago standards. And so it's going to be, it's one of those things that's going to be hard to prove. It's probably going to be, maybe a he said, she said kind of situation. But, maybe this is one of the people While marchers and protesters are calling for the removal of people, maybe they need to take a hard look at their mayor because, I don't think, given Rahm Emanuel's track record and his now famous or infamous quote about never letting a crisis go to waste, well, you probably not only do you not want to let a good crisis go to waste, but if there is a crisis that is going to in any way hinder your election chances, you probably want to put the kibosh on that crisis until such time that it might benefit you or that it will no longer hinder your reelection chances. But, we will see what happens and see if anyone is going to call for the removal of Rahm Emanuel. And even more interesting than that, is that what may or may not happen to them when they do call for the removal of Rahm Emanuel, because they don't call them dead fish for anything. And that's real quickly here before I move on. That is a funny story. I don't know if anyone has ever heard Sean Hannity tell that story, but apparently Rambo watches a few too many Godfather movies. I'm sure, you know, I think they were on all this week, you know, during the Thanksgiving holiday on TV, that I'm sure he sat down with his turkey sandwich and, you know, tuned in. But apparently at some point years ago, Rahm Emanuel mailed somebody a dead fish. I guess this was supposed to be some sort of threat or, you know, who knows when you're talking about Democrats, especially, you know, liberal Democrats, it could be anything. But so that'll be interesting to see how these protests, how long they continue, what happens as a result of them. But a little presidential it's Friday, people. A little presidential politics. While we are here on Conservative Cauldron Radio talking, I guess it was last week, maybe, I did a story about, and I can't remember, forgive me, I can't remember who, where it was from, but it was talking about just exactly who Donald Trump supporters are. And, I remember, I think it was probably from the Politico or New York Times, maybe someplace like that. But basically what we were to glean from this story was that, Donald Trump supporters are, well, they're rednecks, basically. They don't like immigrants. They don't believe that immigration, legal or otherwise, well, they don't believe that legal immigration is good for the nation. You know, they really don't like black people. There's really not a whole lot of things that Donald Trump could do short of being an axe murderer that would make them, you know, change their mind about him and really kind of basically did not paint a very nice picture of just who Donald Trump supporters are. I'm not endorsing Trump here. I am, you know, talking about what I see and what I hear here and what other people are saying and talking about and writing about that, you know, from what I can see is that the electorate of this country, the American people, they're angry. They're pissed. They've been told by Republicans for the past two election cycles, give us the House of Representatives and everything will be great. Give us the Senate and everything will be great. Now they're telling us, well, you know, we need a Republican in the White House before we can get anything done. And so they sent conservatives sent, really not so much Republicans, because in this day and age, Republicans and conservatives in a lot of cases are two different things. But conservatives sent a lot of people to Washington for the first time because they believed that they were going to change what went on there. And I don't know what it is, but when people go to Washington and they get there, there's something that happens to them. I don't know if it's something in the air, something in the water that happens to them, and something takes over and they all of a sudden don't remember what they were sent there to do. And so people are angry. They're angry about that. They see Washington just becoming a bigger and bigger cesspool, and nothing is getting done. No one has their best interest at heart. I think it's getting to the point of boiling over, and how that's going to manifest, I don't know. But Donald Trump has come along and said what a lot of people are thinking, and he is not a politically correct guy, and that's precisely what a lot of people like about him, that he does say what he thinks and he doesn't care what anybody else thinks. And a lot of the beauty of Donald Trump is that he is doing this with his own money too. Therefore, there are no establishment guys that can really, you know, hold any control over them. And that scares the bejesus out of the establishment guys, let me tell you. And that's kind of what I have here. This is a Washington Post article, and it is from Wednesday, and it says plan A for these big-time establishment GOP donors is that they're waiting for Donald Trump to do something or say something that is just going to be the end for him, and he's going to fail. And there was recently this week a story, I believe it was put out by CNN, claiming that Donald Trump made fun of a reporter with some disabilities. If he did, yeah, that is pretty awful and it's pretty nasty. But there is there's some speculation as to whether or not that story is actually true. Because, well, let's face it. All I have to say to most of you who are listening to my voice is, all I have to say to you is the mainstream media. And, you know, you fill in the blank. We know who they are. We know what they are. We know what their agenda is. And so when you say that this was a story put out by CNN, I'm immediately suspect of it. But again, if it's a true story, then yes, let's hold him accountable for what he did, because that's not right. But was there some embellishment? Was there some playing with the truth on the part of CNN? Well, so it's something like that these big time establishment guys are waiting to happen to Donald Trump. And Donald Trump was in Ohio this week, and it says, according to this piece from the Washington Post, that he got a taste of the meager Republican super PAC efforts aimed at him. A 47-second web video clipping together some of his most provocative comments and a small airplane trailing a banner claiming Ohioans can't trust Trump. And he's been on top now for roughly 5 months, and I believe we have about 10 weeks to go until the Iowa caucuses. And he's dodged every bullet that's been shot at him. And it goes on here to say that most of the party's financiers and top strategists are sitting on the sidelines. Many are reluctant to spend money against Trump after watching others fumble as they tried to handle his counterpunches. Others, citing past elections, remain confident that the race will eventually pivot away from him early next year. And I think that, you know, right now everything's great. Everything's, you know, he's at the top of the heap and he's been there. But once people actually start voting in caucuses and primaries and stuff, that's where the rubber's going to hit the road. And you're really going to see what people are thinking. And I think it's going to be fascinating to see what the contrast is between what is going on right now and once actual votes start rolling in. But it also goes on to say that the political network backed by the billionaire Koch brothers has no plans to take on Trump. American Crossroads, the super PAC co-founded by strategist Karl Rove, is steering clear and fixated on Democratic frontrunner Hillary Clinton instead. Right to Rise, the super PAC backing Jeb Bush, is not gearing up to attack Trump either. And major Republican donors such as hedge fund manager Paul Singer and the Ricketts family have shown no interest in supporting the few organizations that are trying to undercut him. And Trump, of course, is reveling in all of this hand-wringing by the establishment, as are a lot of others of us who are not establishment Republicans. There's a lot of hand-wringing over his candidacy, and he has taunted groups targeting him as a, quote, disgrace. And so there really is an absence of big money right now to challenge Donald Trump. And there is a quote here from Fred Malik. He is the finance chairman of the Republican Governors Association, and he says, quote, "I don't think there's any group of establishment donors trying to take down a candidate, nor should there be. Who are we, the donor fundraiser class, to dictate to the voters? The voters can figure that out." And you know what? That's another thing that conservatives, another problem conservatives have with establishment Republicans, is you have guys like Karl Rove coming into your state and telling you who your candidate should be. And I'm not cool with that either. And I think here, you know, people have their own opinions, but at least in Missouri, all you have to do is go back to the Todd Aiken incident. And, you know, wow, I don't know about anybody else, but don't even get me started on that one. And the other fear is that Trump will bolt the party to run as an independent. He has repeatedly warned if he did not treated, quote, fairly, he may reconsider his pledge to support whoever wins the Republican nomination. Well, I have a big problem with that, and the fact that when you run for the presidency, I don't care who you are, Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, who you are, people are going to make negative ads about you. They're going to say nasty, bad things about you. That's, unfortunately, that is part of the process. And if he can't take that, If he can't take that heat, why is he running? You can't sue everybody who is going to run a negative ad about you, because A, it's stupid, it doesn't make any sense, and B, after a while, all you're doing is suing people, and you're not campaigning. You're not telling people why you're out there. You're not telling people what your stance on the issues is, because you're too busy suing people. And, you know, it's that is my biggest problem. That's probably my biggest problem right now with Donald Trump, is that you cannot threaten to sue anyone who says anything negative about you. And especially, you would think someone who has been in the public eye for as many years as Donald Trump has, in whatever capacity it is, people say nasty things about you. It's, you know, you're a public figure. But I'm going to get back. I'm going to take a little short break. We're going to get back to some of why the donors are scared of Trump. Plus, we've got other stuff to get to before we wrap it up for the day. So please do not go anywhere. Stay right where you are. Lots of other things to come. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm Becky Noble. Thanks for hanging out. TGIF. Conservative Cauldron Radio, TGIF. Thank God it's Black Friday for those of you who are out braving the crowds and doing a little bit of Christmas shopping. But we are talking about lots of things here, and one of the things we are talking about is that the big money GOP guys, super PACs like Crossroads, Karl Rove's PAC, and the PAC that is run by the Koch brothers. All these big money guys are staying on the sidelines right now to kind of wait and see what happens with Trump. And there is not a lot of money going into running a lot of negativity about Donald Trump. And, you know, I think it might be most of them are of the opinion that that once things really start rolling by next year, once you have caucuses and primaries starting, people are going to kind of go in different directions, and that a lot of Donald Trump's support will wane. And but there is also, even though he signed the pledge, there is also the kind of looming over everything is the fear that he is going to run as an independent or third party, and that would virtually hand this election to Hillary Clinton. And Donald Trump's a smart guy, and I, you know, is the fact that he wants to be all hacked off because he thinks that people are not treating him right worth another 4 years of the Democrats and Hillary Clinton? You know, let's hope not. But you know, so that's kind of what's going on right now with the big money guys, is that they're kind of standing back and remaining on the sidelines before they give out a lot of money, because they kind of want to wait and see what happens with Donald Trump. But very quickly, because of Thanksgiving, of course, you know, everybody had their relatives over yesterday, and you know, your relatives, especially the ones maybe that you don't see a lot, you can well, what's that old saying? Never talk about religion or politics. Well, you know that you know, you're always going to have those relatives that know you're a conservative and know that you are pretty politically astute, and that they're going to come over and sit at the dinner table with the intention of trying to poke you. So the Democrats launched a website called Your Republican Uncle, and what they did here was that they gave you some talking points for your Thanksgiving dinner table conversation, and they have several subjects here. They have Jeb Bush, they have Obamacare, they have Ted Cruz, they have climate change, the economy, Marco Rubio, they have immigrants and refugees, of course Donald Trump, and equality. Well, so let's look here. Let's click on Obamacare here and see what it says here. When you say we should repeal Obamacare, and then they go on to say nearly one in three Americans who were uninsured a few years ago have coverage today. That's more than 17 million people. If the ACA were repealed, millions of Americans would lose access to quality, affordable health care, and none of the Republican candidates for president have a plan to solve that problem. Well, what they're not telling you is that people's premiums are going up and up and up, and a lot of healthcare companies, a lot of insurance companies like United Healthcare, major insurance companies, are backing out of Obamacare. Let's see what else. Let's go to, since Barack Obama is really going to stick it to those ISIS fellas next week at the climate change summit, let's look and see what your official Thanksgiving Day dinner time talking points from the Democrats are on climate. So when your crazy conservative right-wing relative says climate change is just a liberal scare tactic, you can say to them, this is my liberal voice, why are conservatives more likely to believe that climate change is a conspiracy than to acknowledge what 97% of climate scientists and the majority of Americans believe? Climate change is real, and it's man-made. The Republican presidential field is living in denial. Well, that is not true, because the science is not complete. The science is not there are plenty of scientists who tell you that this is, well, that it's bogus, basically, that it's horse hockey. One more here real quick. Let's talk about immigrants and refugees at the Thanksgiving dinner table. Your crazy right-wing Republican conservative relative says letting Syrian refugees into the United States is like hanging a welcome terrorist banner on the front door. You are supposed to respond, if you are a liberal, the United States has one of the strictest refugee screening processes in the world. We can help families whose lives have been destroyed by ISIS without jeopardizing our security. But when our leaders embrace Islamophobia, that makes it harder for us to fight terrorism abroad. And not for nothing, screening refugees based on their religion goes against everything our country stands for. So I guess what you are also supposed to add to that is that you are to call Refugees Are Us in Damascus, and please ask them to connect you to the database, the refugee database in Damascus, in Syria, so that we can vet all of these people properly who wish to come in. You know, all of those women and children who oddly look enough like the majority of military age, strong, able-bodied men. How exactly does that work? Hope everyone did not have to deal with that at their Thanksgiving dinner table, because, wow, I don't know how much I would have been able to keep down. But also very quickly here, we have a CNN reporter. We were talking about the media earlier and stories they like to float about Donald Trump. A CNN reporter conspired with a Hillary aide to discredit Rand Paul in 2013 email show. Very quickly, there was an email exchange here between a CNN correspondent, Elise Labatt. Her name might be familiar to her. She is the one who made the comment about Syrian refugees a week or two ago. And between her and someone named Philip Rhines, who is a Clinton aide. And basically had a lovely email conversation, and there was no doubt that they were in cahoots with each other. I wish I had more time to talk about that. So we know that the Democrat Party has their propaganda wing of the Democrat Party, and that would be the media. But very quickly here, before I get out of here. Hamilton, Georgia. If you don't like a Georgia sheriff's political incorrectness, you can leave his county. That's what Harris Sheriff Mike Jolly warns on a new sign posted outside his department building. The sign reads, quote, "Warning, Harris County is politically incorrect. We say Merry Christmas, God bless America, and in God we trust. We salute our troops and our flag. If this offends you, leave," unquote. Sheriff Mike Jolly installed the sign Tuesday. Jolly tells local media that he paid for the sign himself and wanted to give voice to what he considers to be a, quote, silent majority. Jolly says he has received overwhelming support from the community and plans to install more of the signs around the county. Some residents have offered to pay for them. So there you go. Not everyone is using the liberal talking points from your RepublicanUncle.com at their Thanksgiving dinner table, especially in Georgia. With that, I am out of here. Hope everyone had a fantastic Thanksgiving holiday. And please have fun shopping, but be careful out there. Go look for me at theconservativecauldron.blogspot.com. There may be something big there next week. Go to facebook.com/BeckyNoble, theblacksphere.net, Kevin Jackson, myself, and a bunch of other people who write awesome things there, and on Twitter at patriotwitch.com. I am out of here. Everybody have a fantastic weekend. I will see you next time.